ever.
It won't be ever. Yeah, yeah.
Served in the military for a number of years and a senior executive at Raytheon. So really just understands the industry and is passionate about it. So really is wonderful to represent us here in Santa Cruz Valley. So with that,
thank you, Holly. Appreciate you. Thank you, guys. It's an honor to be here. Let me get rid of this here. All right, they want me to use a microphone so they can pick up the audio for the recordings later on. So, well, first of all, thank you guys for the invitation here today. These are the fun meetings for me. This is like going to Disneyland, having conversations with aerospace and defense leaders, business leaders. And to Holly's point, a career politician is someone who can't make money in the real world, so they have to keep running for office to make ends meet. So I intend to not do that for the rest of my life, but I have been blessed to be able to work at Raytheon for about 11 years. So we'll talk a little bit about the experiences I had there and what's changed since I was in the business and what can we do to make things better for you. But I want to, first of all, thank Holly for her leadership through the midst of COVID and the effectively the shutdowns, cannibalizing, you know, a third to a half of our economy nationwide. We had shoots of hope throughout Santa Clarita because of your leadership and keeping the lights on here, keeping folks informed and inspiring people to continue to get back to work. And we stayed shut down for too long, but that wasn't Holly's fault. So I want to thank you, Holly. I want to thank the board members. And I want to thank the companies for participating in this industry. This is, as you guys know, this is not the most rewarding industry out there. We catch a lot of grief in the aerospace business because some folks think that you're making money hand over fist. But the reality is that most companies are making anywhere between 12% and maybe 22% margins on some of these contract types. And you have one of the best customers in the form of consistent contracts and consistent money, but you have one of the worst customers because their buyers don't know how to buy your products. And because of that, we suffer a lot of inefficiencies. And you're also subject to the whims of Congress, and ultimately your buyers are funded through Congress, which can be extremely painful. But I think we did learn, at least from the DoD side, that having a nice blend of defense programs and aerospace and defense in the midst of something like the COVID pandemic was advantageous. You had consistent streams, at least predictable streams. It probably ebbed and flowed a little bit in terms of the cash outlays, but at least you knew that a good chunk of your portfolio was not gonna go to zero, unlike what we saw in some of the commercial sectors. So, but appreciate you guys participating. I'm eyes wide open that, many of you are given opportunities to produce things that have higher profit margins, that maybe take up less square feet within your factory, and maybe don't require security clearances, and end up being a little more profitable for you in the long run. And many of you do what you do and dedicate the resources, the human talent, the square footage of your factories, because you do recognize that what we're doing is directly tied to our nation's security and making sure that our warfighters have that unfair advantage that they deserve, so that when things do go sideways and we do end up in some form of conflict, that we know that they're coming home and they're successful in their mission. That's literally why you all do what you do, especially on the DoD side. And many of the commercial applications also spill over into the defense programs as well. So you all have a part in that. I wanna spend most of today doing Q&A and answering your questions. I sit on the defense subcommittee within appropriations now. So we kind of have a tiger by the tail now that I've been on appropriations for more than 2 years, but being on the defense subcommittee, I think there's only something like 12 or 13 of us on this subcommittee that controls half of the discretionary budget that comes out of Congress, and half of that discretionary budget takes the form of defense programs. So we have a unique opportunity. It's not an unfair, you know, inside track or, you know, opportunity, but it is one of these because I'm engaged in this process literally nonstop with my staff. It's very important that I not only understand the issues going into the budgeting cycle, but we understand the issues as they relate to contracting. And you guys have seen in the news, we're spending like crazy coming out of DC. We've allocated something like $10 trillion in the last 3 years. And our annual operating budget as a country is typically about 1.3, 1.35 trillion. If you go back to 2008 to 2019, our annual operating budget, our discretionary funds, is about 1.35 trillion. And that actually was pretty flat for that, you know, more than 10-year period. Okay. So now our debt has continued to go up in that period, but that spending at least wasn't escalatory. And of course, you guys witnessed Budget Control Act and sequestration and some of these levers that were meant to curb government spending. It directly affected your programs, I'm sure. That wasn't the ideal way to do it. But what we've seen since 2019 is our annual operating budget go from $1.35 trillion a year to now in this last omnibus, I think we were over $1.7 trillion a year. And on top of these annual spending budgets, we've overlaid the CARES Act, the America Rescue Plan, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, all of these massive spending packages that are literally 3,000 or 4,000 pages long that really have no clarity in terms of how the money's being spent. It's just a top line sort of clearance not to exceed, in some cases, like $2.2 trillion per bill. And it's wild to spend that much money. So we've injected about $10 trillion into the system of liquidity with record low rates at, at least a year and a half ago, they were 2.5-3%. And so we had record liquidity in the market space with this cash injection. And this is why we now see the record high inflation with the $31 trillion of debt that we're witnessing at a macro level. Why does this matter to you? Well, because this is all trending towards eventually someone's going to wake up and realize that the party's over, the hangover's here, and we need to curb spending. And within that, the government contracts, obviously the DOD budgets, are susceptible, just like any of the other 11 appropriations bills, to spending cuts. So my task, and this is something that I took on last year, McCarthy gave me this action, and now that I'm actually on the subcommittee that controls this, my task is to figure out where we can gain efficiencies in terms of how do we make a dollar behave more like 50 cents rather than 40 cents, which is what it's behaving like right now when it goes through the Pentagon. How do we increase or accelerate some of these production timelines or even development program timelines? And that's where I'm going to need your help. Okay, this is all relevant conversations this month, next month, all the way through June, especially. The president's budget request is coming out in the next couple of weeks, right? You guys know the budgeting cycle. The president asks for a certain amount of money. Congress looks at it and says, this is what we're going to do instead of what the president's asking. We're going to add here. We're going to subtract here. But the services have already weighed in terms of what the president's going to ask for. And we'll talk about that process. But last year, I think the final number ended up being about $860 billion for the DOD budget. And the president's budget request started at like $775 billion. So you can see from the time that it left the White House to the time it got passed and signed into law, it went up, close to 10% in that case because there were gaps. But even that 10% increase in just those few short months was still a smaller increase than most of the government spending bills year over year. They were averaging about 18% year over year increases. And so the DOD budget has actually lagged. So regardless of what the dollar value ends up being coming out of Congress, whether it's $850 billion or $775 billion, the question is, how do we make that money behave more like $900 billion? In a 5-year period, how do we make that behave more like $1 trillion? Because while some of the folks in DC may think it's Republicans versus Democrats, you guys know that the real threat is China and what we're facing right now relative to China. I also sit on the Intelligence Committee, and what we're seeing is a real threat that has passed us in several domains. And while their budgets in terms of pure dollar values and percentage of their GDP, may look lower than the United States, what China does is that they actually leverage their entire commercial sector. There is no military industrial complex in China. There is only an industrial complex and all of it feeds into their military programs, okay? So they are leveraging what may look like an innocuous TV development program is actually eventually scaled into an upfront control on their J-20 fighters on the front line. And they, on paper, look like they didn't spend a dollar developing that J-20. It was all done at component modular level development in the commercial sector, and then some secret squirrel government agency cobbled it all together, okay? And this is why they're able to move faster. This is why they're able to build at a faster rate than we are. They build, right now, China is building 2 ships per month while we build 2 ships per year as a country, okay? That is staggering. When you look at our fleet of naval forces, you know, we have aspirations of this 350-ship Navy. They're already well beyond that. And when you look at the mission that China has, their mission's actually a lot simpler than ours. Their mission is defense of the homeland. Their mission is to annex Taiwan and basically create a homogenous CCP throughout Southeast Asia and control just that sector. Even though that's a very large sector, that's still a defensive posture. Our mission and our forces are power projection missions, which are a little tougher, right? We're literally sending our troops, our airmen, our sailors around the world to defend countries like Taiwan and Japan, South Korea, and all of our stakeholders overseas. So it's a much more difficult mission set that we have relative to China's investments across both sectors, commercial and DoD. We are investing less. And we are lagging them in terms of technology in the space domain, cyber capacity. These balloons are sort of the obvious manifestation of their ability to project power and us being completely blindsided. But this is the tip of the iceberg relative to the other domains that they actually have outpaced us and passed us on. So that's the real threat, right? That's why we need to make sure that whatever the dollar value that comes out of this DoD budget behaves like 10% more than what it is in the next 5 years. And then as we look longer, you know, we can continue to make enhancements. There's going to be a large chunk of us that want to cut defense spending because we're going to be cutting every spending bill, okay? Even though we're cutting defense spending, if that ends up being the case, and I don't know that that's going to be the case. So a lot of us are going to fight against that. But whatever the number ends up being, the bottom line is we've got to gain the efficiencies. We've got to accelerate the timelines. And that's the whole point of this. Yeah, go ahead. Well, that's where we're heading on this conversation. I want to hear this from you guys especially. But my sense is... they don't have the equivalent kind of problems that we have in terms of the contracting officers that are stuck in the 90s when we've been told, hey, better buying power 1.0, better buying power 2.0. Hondo Gertz comes out and wants to go faster and the rapid capability office comes out. But then all of these contracts flow through contracting officers that are incentivized and have still kept this paradigm of grinding contractors on every point of fee, rather than valuing technology development and speed, okay? And this is where I'm heading with this, is I want to hold the Pentagon primarily accountable, the program offices, the PMAs, the SPOs, accountable for realizing not just the efficiencies in terms of clawback on profit from industry, but also realizing accelerations in timeline and capacities in that. China doesn't have the equivalent of DCMA, right? On the backside of a contract award, they're not grinding their contractors and doing audits, and they don't do yearly awards, right? They really, like I said, it's all one entity, right? So the money's just flowed and obligated almost like in a very fluid manner. Whereas ours, if Boeing wants to build, say, a Super Hornet, right, they need to go get a mother may I from Congress, the president, every single year. And then the logistics and sustainment, all the OMM budgets behind it are year over year awards as well, right? So we have not incentivized industry to look at this business through a 15-year paradigm or 20-year paradigm. But when you look at what China has done, their strategy is a 2035 to 2050 timeframe, and their whole government is anchored to this construct of China 2050, which is a global dominant country, basically, at that point, underpinned by socialism and communism. And so they don't care about annual contracts. They care about, hey, can you deliver a J-20 strike fighter in 3 years? And if so, then here's the billions of dollars that, or whatever is needed, whatever resources you need to go enable that. They do ask questions. They do have, you know, accountability and oversight, just like our government does, but not with the teeth and not with the rigor that our Pentagon puts into it. Okay. So they value speed. They value efficiencies. We don't, as a rule of thumb, at least from what I've seen in the last 20 years, we don't value those things, at least through the Pentagon. Okay. So that's part of the paradigm shift we need to make. We're actually trying to characterize that right now. There's a few initiatives within the $850 billion right now that are not dedicated. Every dollar of the DoD budget should go towards two missions, right? Deterring a war, and if unable to deter a war, winning the war. And we have asked the question of certain woke policies that are being funded, and there are, okay, this isn't conspiracy theory, guys. There are a lot of projects that are within all of the federal budgets that are frankly silly projects that we need to strip out, and especially in the DoD. They don't help us deter a war. They don't help us win a war. There are climate change initiatives within the DoD budget that also don't help us deter a war and don't help us win a war if that war is undeterred. So the Republicans right now in the Defense Subcommittee in HACD are trying to characterize that dollar figure, and we're relying on some of the combatant commanders and some of the secretaries to help us characterize that number. They haven't been cooperative, but yes, that's the first sort of instantiation of realizing a bucket of money that could either be harvested and or cut, or harvested and used for, you know, warfighter readiness and technology development programs. We can't as of right now. No, we started asking that in the first week of January, and we are slowly getting some of that information. In the end, if we can't get that data, because it's executive branch, right? The executive branch is not cooperating with us on some of these things right now. The executive branch in the president's budget request, for instance, last year, we know there's a strike fighter shortfall, right? We know there's not enough F-35s. We know there's not enough F-18s, F-15s out there. Yet the president's budget request asked for zero F-18s, asked for the minimum quantity of F-15EX, and ended up only asking for something like, I think, 36 to 40 F-35s when the original plan was, I think it was between 72 and 90 for that year. Okay, so literally asking for half of the F-35s, but the budget request was still sort of this high water mark of $760 billion. So that money is going somewhere. It's not just all going to the Columbia class submarine. It's not all just going to some of these major procurement programs. It's not going to the jets. It's not going to the tanks. And it's not just going to the ships if we're only building two ships a year. And we're actually netting fewer than that per year on the ship side because we're decommissioning more than two ships a year right now in the Navy. So the bottom line is all this money is there. It's just being used on programs. And a big chunk of the money, as you guys know, is personnel. The bureaucrats in the DC area, the Pentagon right now, you could probably get rid of half of the civil servants in the Pentagon right now, and you would not only save money, but I would submit you would actually probably go faster in terms of contracting and some of these, especially the straight stick production programs that shouldn't have the rigor being put into them right now that they do. So we're working to gain all those efficiencies. If we can't get the information from the executive branch, what we will do is just lay in the platforms, okay, and then force them to make the cuts in terms of whatever other either overhead or outlying fat that they have within the budget, whatever the number ends up being, okay? So you effectively force their hand by saying, hey, you must procure B-21 at full rate. You must fund Columbia at full rate. You must buy X number of F-35s, X number of F-15s, X number of F-18s to close the strike fighter gap. And then you also must take care of the troops. Okay. And this is the last piece that I'll end with before we go into the Q&A. By the way, B-21 and all of the programs for the most part at Plant 42, which is what I suspect many of you tap into in terms of sustainment or production side revenue. Those are all fully funded. The only program that we lost up there was the SOFIA program, the 747 with the deep space camera on it. That thing was, frankly, it was long in the tooth. It was inefficient. It was our beloved baby, our program up there, but NASA would not support it anymore. And as hard as I fought to try to keep it, when NASA is saying, hey, it's a dinosaur, Mike, we can't fund it anymore. It's hard for me to win that battle. But all the classified programs, all the next generation stuff coming out is all fully funded. And so we are also now working on the production side on the legacy platforms, which I know many of you tap into. So we have actually good news stories. And the problem is right now, our troops are not being taken care of. They haven't been taken care of properly for the 25 years I've been a part of the military. The average enlisted soldier, airman, sailor right now, when they join as an E1, they're making just over $21,000 a year, okay? I don't think the average American realizes that. It's not till they're in for 4 years and they've been promoted twice that they're actually above that what we all consider to be that sort of minimum wage, that $15 national minimum wage, right? $15 an hour after being in the service for 4 years. While in and out workers are making $24 an hour right now, starting right down the street. So, by the way, some of these bases are in most of these bases are in relatively high cost of living areas because that's where all the infrastructure support the bases are. So, and they're being taxed just like everyone else. So, I don't know how we win a war against China when we aren't taking care of our troops. We have record low retention right now, record low recruitment. The Army missed their recruitment goal last year by 25%. The other services aren't meeting their recruitment goals, but that's not public because they're changing their recruitment goals. So they're just lowering the standards and it looks like they're making their metrics, but overall they're actually bringing in less talent. They're holding talent for shorter periods of time. They have retention problems. So this is a huge problem from a readiness perspective, from a warfighter, capacity perspective. This is a huge problem that isn't being addressed. And I've been working on, I got a bill that as a Republican, I'm in the minority last session, but we still got a bill signed into law to help military spouses receive reciprocity for their professional license. So if you get orders from Virginia to California, for instance, and you're on active duty, but your husband or wife is a doctor, a nurse, a teacher, real estate agent, cosmetologist, whatever it is that requires a license, in the past, they had to get re-credentialed, recertified in the new state. I mean, and that in California, you guys know that could be thousands of dollars. That could be 6 months, 2 years in some professions. And what was happening is people would get orders to Edwards Air Force Base or LA Air Force Base, Point Magoo, and they just, the spouses would just not work. They'd become stay-at-home parents, and you'd go from dual income to single income. We actually got a bill passed in the House three times. It finally got through the Senate in December of last year. And then Biden about 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago now, signed it into law that requires all professions to recognize those credentials across state lines. So right now we have now literally a few more thousand spouses that can, in the SoCal area, there's about 140,000 families affected by this throughout the DOD that can go work as teachers, nurses, doctors right away without getting recredited. The only profession is lawyers. Lawyers are not part of this. So I would submit we have enough lawyers already anyway. So that's probably okay. And I'll get sued for saying that at some point, I'm sure. So there's things like that on the quality of life for the troops. I've got a bill right now that we're trying to put together that puts the minimum salary for enlisted at $32,000, which is the equivalent of that $15 an hour rate. So, all that to say that we can have all the B-21s, F-35s and ships and tanks and all the weapons in the world. But if we don't have that fighting force, the human beings that want to serve their country, that are willing to put their lives on the line in defense of this country, then then we will still lose every combat operation. We will not effectively deter war, and we'll end up getting our butts kicked in a war. And so we've got to work on that. All right, I'll open the floor to questions. What I want to know, and this is kind of an action for all of us, if you guys are good with this, I've got a defense forum that I'm hosting in Plant 42. We were just about to send the save the dates out. I won't give you the date because it'll just confuse everyone, but it's now going to get rescheduled for June. The Secretary of the Air Force is coming out. He will be the keynote speaker for us. I'm trying to get also build a plant there to engage in conversations with us, not to come and give us a speech, but to answer a Q&A. You guys know Bill LaPlante's basically the head buyer at the Pentagon. Heidi Hsu will likely be coming to that. She's the director of development programs through the Pentagon. Okay, so, and then hopefully you all have either received or have heard of this event, because I want all of our aerospace and defense suppliers in the district to at least be invited, and I would encourage you guys to go. We had 100 companies RSVP for it last year, and then they scheduled votes like 3 days before the event. They scheduled votes on us. That won't happen this time because we control when votes are scheduled, and we'll be inviting the Speaker of the House to this as well. I don't know that he'll go, but the whole point of this forum is it's different than the Reagan Defense Forum. The Reagan Defense Forum is more academic, talking about strategy, and you know, everyone gets up and opines about certain things. But this defense forum, it's called the North LA County Defense Forum. Like I said, it's going to be in Plant 42, but the focus of this is how do we go faster? And I want to flip the tables on the Pentagon. Rather than them coming and briefing industry and saying, industry, we need you to do this, I want industry there to tell the Secretary of the Air Force and Bill LaPlante, we need to do this, okay? Here's how you help us go faster. Don't give me an undefinitized contract award for 3 years and then use all my actuals after that to definitize the contract so that I end up with only effectively 10% margins. Don't do annual buys when you know this is a three-year program and you can help us out by buying. We can go buy long lead on our own dime if we just know that there's a three-year contract there and it's not going to be put at risk in year two and three, okay? Don't give me fixed price contracts on complicated development programs and disincentivize me from investing in it or even bidding it. And then, you know, don't grind me on every point of margin on the backside of a production program that we've had going on for 20 years. I won't name the company, but I was on the phone last Thursday with the Chief of Naval Air Forces, three-star admiral, who they have refused, the Secretary of the Navy turns out has refused to award a contract that has been awarded for probably 45 years, production contract, recurring annual production contract, because they're trying to claw back some intellectual property from the OEM that they don't have rights to, that they, the government, don't have rights to, okay? And they said it on this call. They said, Mike, this is very important. We have to have this intellectual property. And I said, well, it's very interesting that you guys are asking for this, because this contract didn't even exist until we added this production back into the president's budget. So the president and the executive branch, the Pentagon, didn't ask for this contract, but you're telling me that this intellectual property is necessary for you to organically maintain the jets. And what you're asking for is actually IP relating to production of the jets, not maintenance of the jets. And you can hear there was this long, awkward pause. And I just said, hey, if it's that important, you would have asked for this production contract in your request. And they're shutting their line down, you know, here imminently because of these actions. And so these are the types of conversations we need to have. We'll have the same conversation this week with the Secretary of Navy on this program. But this is how we make sure that these programs stay alive, frankly, in some cases. And so my ask of you, the action of all of us, and Tammy's in the back, she's my field rep out here, but we'll also engage the team in DC, is what are you guys experiencing as, you know, as many, some of you are, you know, top of the food chain, but many of you are sort of third, fourth level down suppliers. What are the things that are slowing you guys down, and what does the Pentagon need to do better? What can Congress need to do better? By the way, I I'm eyes wide open that the continued resolution, the CR, is probably the most damaging thing in terms of contracting and sustainment and just keeping these new development programs going. So we are working on trying not to do a CR through a congressional perspective. It's not just the Pentagon that's broken, Congress is broken too, and we need to fix that. My objective is so that when we get everyone in the same room for this defense forum, we've got the Pentagon, we'll have hopefully the chair of HACD, Ken Calvert there, hopefully the chair of the House Armed Service Committee, Mike Rogers there, and we'll have a couple of leaders from the Senate Armed Service Committee there as well. We'll have the Secretary of the Air Force and then a lot of industry folks. My goal in that meeting is so that rather than everyone kind of doing this, oh, it's this guy's fault, it's their fault, that everyone documents a top 10 list of things that we need to do better from a contracting perspective, behavioral pattern changes that we need to realize from an acquisition perspective, so that we can go faster. And then we do it every 2 years. And then we do status on those actions. And most of those actions, by the way, my goal is to have most of those actions land in the lap of the Pentagon where the contracting is being done, not your guys' lap. Okay, you guys are getting actions every day from the Pentagon already. So with that, guys, I'll stop talking and kind of get your perspectives on all things. By the way, if you have any questions about anything, please feel free. Everything's on the table. So we'll try to keep it not